We're gonna open with 3546.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
House Water and Environment Committee will come to order. Morning, everyone. We're going to start with 3536 because we have people who have other commitments. And we'll be moving 3558 over to Friday for anybody here on that bill. So I'm gonna open a hearing on House Bill 3536. Have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 3536 removes the ability to assert privilege for environmental audit reports within a criminal investigation or proceeding. Thank you.
Call for John Ledger and Don Hagenson. Morning.
Morning. Morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries. And I also have with me Don Hagenson, who is a partner with Cable Houston, Benedict Hagenson and Lloyd, who's been working on this project with DEQ and AOI for some time. This is a bill that deals with environmental audits. Just very briefly, an environmental audit is a self-inspection that companies do to see if they're in compliance with environmental rules and laws. And they may do the self-inspection themselves, or they may hire a contractor to do it. And usually they put the results in a report, so it's all compiled. And they do it to make sure they're in compliance, they do it to reduce their liability, and also by doing this type of analysis, it also helps them determine how well their operations are working. This control and the emissions can tell you a lot about what's going on inside the plant. Environmental audits are often done at the requirement of DEQ, and that is, it's in the permit, says you'll do self-audits, and those are always made available to DEQ. They might be sent in, or they might just be held on the premises for inspection. But a lot of companies do extra audits because they want to find out if they're in compliance or not. And under the Environmental Audit Privilege Act, they can hold the results of these audits, the ones they're not required to do, the extra ones, as privileged information. And that's like attorney-client privileged information. And the reason this was done, the reason this bill was passed, the act was passed, was to encourage companies to go out and self-audit as much as possible, find problems and correct them. And when they do find a problem, in order to retain the privilege, they do have to correct it within a timely fashion. One of the issues that has come up, especially with EPA, is the issue about holding information privilege when it's a civil violation versus a criminal violation. And that has caused some problems with the DEQ getting delegation for some programs, most notably in hazardous waste. And so what we would like to do is help DEQ, help EPA, also help us get the delegations we need to limit the audit privilege, the information that's privileged, only to civil cases, not criminal cases, and make that clear. And that will free up DEQ to take delegation of some programs that it's having problems with right now, which is good for us and good for everyone. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, and then Mr. Hagenson.
Questions? Representative Monica Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Describe what instance would be a criminal case.
Madam Chairman, Representative Mona Sanderson, I might ask Don Hagenson if you could address that.
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, Don Hagenson here for AOI. The situation would be where a person knew, the easiest example is they knew that there was a requirement that they had to have a permit before they would discharge wastewater into a stream, for example. So that the Department of Environmental Quality could regulate that discharge and ensure that it wouldn't have an adverse impact on the stream. And that person didn't obtain the permit and intentionally discharged in order to avoid, say, for example, the cost that would be associated with a permit or in order to avoid the controls that would be associated with having a permit. And under Oregon's environmental statutes, that person would be susceptible to being charged with an environmental crime. Subject to potential imprisonment, subject to potential fines.
So that would be considered a criminal a violation. Then, what if someone died because of the discharge in the stream?
stream, what would happen then?
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, again, there would be the crime because they were intentionally discharging, and that it would potentially aggravate the penalties or the imprisonment that person could be subject to. There also could be civil action brought against that person for the discharge if it caused damage to a person or property. The person who was damaged or the property who was damaged could also have a civil remedy against that person.
Just one further thought. Well, I was wondering if I mean, if it was really egregious, like someone did die, then basically the parents of or the person, no one could sue, or no, that wouldn't be it either. I'm just trying to see if they would be held liable for the death.
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, yes, they would. And
this bill, though?
This bill would still retain the privilege for civil proceedings, but one of the key components of the privilege that John mentioned is that any violation you discover through a voluntary audit has to be promptly and diligently corrected.
Okay,
so if you don't do that, you immediately lose the privilege. So once you do this audit, and the idea is you discover that there's something that's not in compliance with the law, and you immediately correct it. And if you don't do that, then you lose the privilege, and the audit report would be available for any use at all.
Thank you.
Could I ask you, too, Mr. Higginson, the way current law is, can this information not even be subpoenaed, or can it be subpoenaed?
Chair Close, under current law, it can, and there is a process that if it were a criminal proceeding, I think is what you're asking about, there is a process for an in-camera inspection by a judge and a determination of whether the report is necessary for the criminal proceeding, whether the privilege has been waived, whether it's information that can't be gained in any other way. So there is a mechanism now for an audit report to be obtained in a criminal proceeding, but it's a more arduous process and that's where EPA has in particular said that restricts Oregon's enforcement authority for criminal activities and therefore impinges on the ability of EPA to delegate these state programs to Oregon.
Representative Morgan.
What I'm interested in here is exploring a little bit more what we are getting back in exchange for giving this ability. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Chair Close, Representative Morgan. What has happened is that because of EPA's view of the audit privilege, is that some programs, notably in hazardous waste management, but potentially in others, have not been delegated to the state, which means that you have a federal program, hazardous waste control, whatever, and normally the state would receive delegation for that and implement that program for the federal government in Oregon. And what is happening is that the EPA is not delegating that authority to the state. And so what we are seeing is federal inspections, federal enforcement, essentially it's taking over of some of DEQ programs by the federal government because EPA feels they can't delegate a program to the state with the law as it currently is. And so we are having quite a few Oregon companies now that instead of having, actually they're having both, inspect them, EPA and DEQ, and they're being subjected to federal enforcement. And we much prefer that the state have primacy on these programs.
May I have a follow-up, Chair? It's not that I don't have a high degree of trust in the EPA, but what guarantees do we have that we'll get control of these programs if this legislation is passed?
Representative Morgan, we have actually a copy, and I think DEQ could probably speak to it better, a letter from EPA saying that this statute, if it were passed, would solve that problem and would remove the impediment to delegation.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that other states have had to do this same process, and this is not out of the ordinary. Is that correct?
Madam Chairman, Representative Lee, that's true. Audit, Oregon passed the first Audit Privilege Act. Ours is actually quite mild and limited compared to some of the ones that were passed subsequently.
Right,
some of those have been rolled back almost completely.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is, the limitation that needs to be done on this one is relatively minor.
Thank you.
Further comments or questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll call Neil Mullane. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John gave probably everything I was...
For the record.
Oh, for the record, my name is Neil Mullane. I'm the Deputy Director for DEQ, and I'm going to be here to talk to you a little bit about 3536. The department supports this bill, and John has mentioned a lot of the things that are covered in my testimony. We did pass the audit privilege in the country first, and other states followed, and as John has indicated, their privileges were much more significant than ours. And EPA had a lot of difficulties with those audit privileges, and nationally has moved to go around to each of the states and request those privileges be removed. And the bill that we have before you today takes care of the situation that we have discussed with EPA, and specifically the sanctions for the privilege for the criminal activities. There was a question asked earlier about the privilege itself, I think, in terms of whether or not this is what would happen. And I guess that was the concern specifically of EPA in terms of us having the privilege for criminal activity, is that it would make it more difficult to get the information from the companies. And removing that privilege makes it easier for people to obtain that information and move forward. I support the bill and would answer any questions. I've attached to my testimony the letter that EPA has sent the department in support of the bill also.
Everybody likes to have that amendment, huh?
Mm-hmm. No brainer.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you very much. Okay, that completes the witnesses on this bill. Was there anyone else? You weren't here for this bill. Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3536. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3536.
Chair.
Representative Kasori.
I move House Bill 3536 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kasori moves House Bill 3536 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. And Representative Monica Anderson will carry the bill.
Well, you can do this as well, right?
Did you just give her one, too?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I like that one. We're opening a public hearing on House Bill 2049, and staff will read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The original bill on House Bill 2049 creates the Interagency Wildlife Management, Damage Management Coordinating Committee to evaluate, recommend, coordinate, and publicize measures for controlling damage caused by wildlife. We have a Dash 1 amendment for us today that requires the Director of Ag and ODF&W to jointly appoint a wildlife damage specifies that this council will meet twice a year, and it talks about how they will function. We had a large fiscal on this bill originally, and you have the old original fiscal in your packet, as well as I've inserted the new fiscal, which there is no fiscal. That was the goal of the work group that came up with these Dash 1 amendments, but there'd be no fiscal on this advisory committee. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to recess the hearing on House Bill 2049 and move to the work session on House Bill 3099. Representative Leonard is here. And would you come forward? I assume we have amendments?
Great.
You have the amendment? You have the amendment?
I think they're coming.
What's the bill number?
The bottom of the press.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Randy Leonard, State Representative of Portland. The bill, original bill, 3099, would have required that ODFW allow licensees for hunting licenses to renew by mail. Because of the large fiscal involved and some other concerns, we developed, my office and ODFW developed these dash two amendments that you're looking at that would create a pilot project that would allow ODFW to determine where a pilot project would occur and what would occur with, and then report back to the next legislature as to the effectiveness of the pilot project. All the members not have the dash two.
Madam Chair. Representative Morgan. Representative Leonard, have you had the opportunity to get a fiscal on the latest, the dash two?
No. What we were attempting to do with ODFW was do it within their existing resources. It would be an impact.
I believe line 16 addresses that. It says the department shall provide the staff necessary.
Yeah, but that's going to cost money.
Yeah.
Our goal is to try to do it with the existing staff and not hire new staff.
Yeah.
And the existing budget. And if we develop these amendments with the department to meet that goal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we did receive amendments this morning, so we're unable to get a fiscal done on these specific amendments. So, the party don't have a fiscal on the amendments.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
Yeah, Representative Leonard, who do you envision being on this task force?
Well, I would hope that it would be obviously users, sports fisher people, and people that actually use the system.
So we would be assuming they would be participating on their own dime here because it doesn't speak to compensation.
Right. Yeah, the idea was to develop something that was as cost neutral as possible and using as much as possible existing resources. I have felt, for those of you that may have missed my original presentation, this is my second session on the SR2 committee, as I know it is for some of you, and I just recall last session having a presentation from ODFW with the receipts from licenses and hunting licenses going down. And I, for myself, who is a part-time fisherman, I, to a large degree, I own a boat. I have the fishing equipment. But often when I have the time in a day where I could go fish, I realize I don't have a current license. And for me to go get a license means I have to go to G.I. Joe's or someplace, actually quite a bit out of my way, before I go fishing. And it's just enough of a hindrance that I don't go. On the other hand, I am a person that if I had a license once and that every time my license expired, I had a renewal notice in the mail as we get for our vehicles or RVs or whatever, I would routinely renew, as I've discussed this idea the last couple of years with a lot of people I know that fish a lot, as would they. And I think it was in the long term, we'd find not only is it a customer-friendly service for consumers, it would enhance the department's revenue. And you'll notice we've also included the ability to renew over the internet as part of the task, as part of the trial or
word I'm looking for. Pilot project.
President Cruz.
Madam Chair, were you going to have Roy come up and speak to Representative Morgan's concerns about how much staff time this is going to take?
That's a good idea. We were sure that Roy was going to make it here, but he's early. So please come here.
Okay, Madam Chair, my apologies. As Representative Leonard has testified to, for the record, Roy Elliker, legislative coordinator for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have worked with Representative Leonard on these amendments. We're prepared to put together some kind of pilot program with assisting staff resources. Our only caveat is on the mail aspect, that looks pretty doable to us and not very expensive for us to take a shot at that. What I was cautioned at by our information people is that when we're dealing with the World Wide Web, there can be very considerable costs involved on renewability and licensing there. So I can't say exactly in our pilot program how heavy it will be on the World Wide Web aspects, being that going in, we know there's considerable expense there. But we're prepared to put together a pilot program with assisting staff resources and work with the task force and see what we can do this biennium, this upcoming biennium.
Just a ballpark guess as to how much staff time it's going to take to pilot and staff task force. I mean, Representative Morgan's concern was in existing resources, and if assuming your people already have full-time jobs in what they're doing, you know, how are they going to do this also? So,
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I don't have those exact numbers. Kay Brown put that all together in working with Representative Leonard's office. I can provide those to you probably by 11 o'clock this morning if you'd like, sir, but I just don't have them right at hand.
Go ahead, Representative Monifant.
Yes, I was just, thank you, Madam Chair. I am curious regarding, does the department have a website?
Madam Chair, Representative Mona's answering, yes, we do.
And you can't have a link to something, I'm trying to figure out what the extents would be, a link to a registration area within the governmental system with your own database? Or is that still expensive?
Madam Chair, Representative Mona Anderson, I think from my understanding, part of the issue is that we don't have programmers right now, that we have to contract somewhat with some consulting firm to do this renewability by the web. Second issue, I think, is some expense comes from the security aspects. If somebody wants to use a credit card and send it, you know, through the computer, I think part of this considerable expense is designing a program to make sure that you have a secure site.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I know those are two expenses right there I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Can I ask, does the department have the ability to take credit cards at this time for payment? Just for general purposes?
Madam Chair, well, we certainly can't take them over on the Internet, no. I don't know at the point of sale if we take credit cards for that or not. I'd have to double check before I give an answer.
Okay.
Madam
Chair. Further questions, Representative King.
I think that probably a lot of expenses, building firewalls, so when you're handling money, but it seems like it might be, appropriate for not only this committee to look at this issue, but the government committee. It seems like it might be an issue really for the cabinet, because I think eventually one would think that perhaps all the agencies are going to be dealing with how we're going to transact money over the internet, and it might not just be the agency creating something and then having another agency creating something and that they not be compatible, but that there'd be some kind of master structure, so that if ODF&W said we need this, then we can say, well, we already have the capacity, we'll add you onto that. Also wonder, though, does it help keep the cost of licensing down if we do have the G.I. Joes of the world handling that? So, Representative Leonard, when he gets his license, has to look at all those nice fishing poles and that fishing gear and all those toys that he'd kind of like to have. Does it help keep the cost down some?
Representative Close, Representative King, I'm not quite sure. I mean, we only pay, I believe, at this point, 50 cents per license for the handling of the paperwork and issuance of the license. And I'm sure that most businesses look at that probably as a little bit of a loss leader. I don't believe it's 50 cents an issue. They're really making any money. But because you're coming into their business, I think that is why we haven't been pushed to increase that far more than 50 cents per license.
If I could follow up on that. It seems like that is an important issue. It might be a good idea for ODFNW to get a handle of the feelings of some of the, the people who offer the license, how happy they are with that and how much they value that relationship, or is it kind of a hassle for them?
Can I add to that? At the original hearing we had, Representative King, Phil Donovan, who represents G.I. Joe's, testified that they did not oppose this bill.
Oh, right.
In fact, they did lose money on it, but they were convinced that when people went fishing, they'd be coming into G.I. Joe's anyway to get whatever equipment they needed. So I went to him originally with this idea because I had that same kind of a concern, and he checked with his client, and they had no problem with the bill. They're feeling, as expressed by Phil here at the last hearing, was, if we can do something to have more people get fishing licenses, it could actually enhance their business.
Great, thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
A couple of things, a little bit of follow on Representative King's comments. I believe, addition to the possible economic benefit to whoever the G.I. Joes of the world might be, that also potentially has a benefit as far as the department is concerned, because I believe these are not some monies that are returned from the sale of sporting good equipment to the department through a federal.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, you're quite correct, sir. Sport fish restoration money through those. Yeah.
It's not only important it's not only important to sell the license as far as revenue is concerned, it's also important to sell the paraphernalia as far as the industry is concerned for the department. But on the issue, if I may, Madam Chair, another question. On the issue of the web, where I understand the possibility of some problems with the use of the credit cards, and the possibility that the department doesn't want to get into that, because you also may run something of it costs you just X percent just to process the credit cards. But the use of the internet for purposes of application, so that you could trigger the application of that, the department then would send out the necessary material for you to apply for a fishing slash hunting license.
Yeah.
There's a possibility with that.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I think that's one on this pilot project. My assumption is there might be some way to send some, for instance, when people get licenses, and if they want to give us an email address, we might trigger a renewable, something to remind them it's time to renew. That's, I think, certainly one aspect of the pilot project we'd be looking at.
Okay. I would like to, Madam Chair, commend Representative Leonard for bringing this idea forward to us. I would, however, have some concern, I think, that it required a state representative to bring this kind of an issue forward to us. Since I've been in this body, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been searching constantly for ways to increase their revenues, and I realize, Roy, this is not, that you're relatively new, and this is not in your domain or jurisdiction that this took place, but it seems like a little creativity of this type might be the thing that the department would continually be looking for, too.
Well, Representative Jensen, that's why we're here. We're still back.
I know.
Representative Cruz.
Well, I think I'll support this too. I think it's a step in the right direction, but I would also point out to Representative Leonard that I think you will find, if you really look at the decrease in licenses, part of the reason is that it's become so complicated and understand what the rules are that you almost have to have a law degree to be able to interpret the book. So that is another part of this problem.
I understand that, but as you know, Representative Cruz, I am accepted so thoroughly to be prepared in any efficient environment. I grew up in your position by the boat. That I own for that purpose, specifically because it was in your district, North River.
Yeah.
North River. And so what little bit of difficulty there is to get to these rules is minuscule.
A follow-up to that, I would say he didn't go there because it's in my district. He went there because it's the best boat on the market.
Well, that too. Secondary.
Commercial there.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, may I comment to Representative Cruz? The department on the record on that. A few years ago, I think it was about five, we started an effort to simplify our regulations, and we met with a number of angler groups. Believe it or not, we could not get them to think about simplifying regulations because when it came to their particular body of water or the favorite spot they love to fish, they had all kinds of regulations that wanted to stay in place just for that spot, whether it's to keep others out or what. And so as someone who has always felt that you have, Representative Cruz, our hunting and fishing regulations should be simpler than they are. It has been amazing to me that when we met with anglers on this very issue and really wanted to make a go at it, I think it was about 5-6 years ago, we could not. In the end, we threw up our hands and said, okay, they want the regulations this way. Without the fishermen's support and people really, I feel the way you do. Our regulations are too complex. But it was just amazing to me that we could not get more support for that within the fishing community.
Follow up. I think part of the problem there is you're dealing mostly with people that fish first and breathe second. And
You're right.
Okay. And I think part of it.
Yeah.
Well, only if the line's in the water. But the impact has truly been on the casual every one weekend a month sort of fisherman who just gets a whim like Representative Leonard and wants to go out and drop a line in the water and you go looking on the South Coast and figure out where you can fish for what, you know. You either just go ahead and do what you're gonna do, whether you're legal or not, or you throw up your hands and say, I can't figure this out, so I guess I won't go fishing. And I think that's a lot of the impact on the number of licenses we're selling.
Thank you, Representative Cruz, for that dissertation.
Madam Chair, wait, there's a bill coming to the floor. You'll be able to hear a dissertation on that. This was the statement.
Okay. Further questions? Seeing none, we are in work session. We will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I would move House Bill 39, these amendments. I would move the -2 amendment to House Bill 3099.
Representative Jensen moves the -2 amendment and the House Bill 3099. Is there discussion? Representative King.
Quick one. I'm going to be supporting the amendment, but having you put together some other ideas for task forces, et cetera, and without fiscal, I know the governor has given instructions out to the agency directors not to voluntarily accept task forces without fiscals, and also, we have a lot of resistance to task forces, which are expense. So, you might look at a modest fiscal, or addressing that as a work group, as you proceed in order to get the bill into fruition.
I will follow that up in the Senate report.
Further discussion. Okay, is there objection to the -2 moving into the bill? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Is there justice?
I'd move House Bill 3099 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 3099 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Jensen. Aye.
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 Is excused. Both aye. Motion carries. Representative Leonard, will you carry this bill? Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 3099. Okay, we're going back to the hearing on House Bill 2049. And I hope you can all remember the summary. Representative Lee is going to report on the work group that was done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a work group that took this issue under consideration, and as you can see from the folks who attended, we had the pertinent agencies, Ag, Fish and Wildlife, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, as well as several interest groups. They came to agreement on what you see as the Dash 1 Amendment. The Dash 1 Amendment before you, which sets up an advisory task force that would work with the agencies, meeting only semi-annually so that there would be no fiscal impact, to look at this issue and come up with a plan to present to the next legislative session. The bill would be repealed January of 2004. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Basically, the amendment requests the directors of Fish and Wildlife and Agriculture to make these appointments, and the work group was comfortable that the designated participants did not need to be named in the legislature but could be chosen by the directors. They well know who is interested in this area and would be inclusive in their selection. Thank you.
Representative Lee, could you just walk us through the Dash 1 here? I think everybody's just now digesting it.
Okay. In the legislation itself, on the bill, page 1, we take out state and local agencies, and we replace that with a broad range of people that would need to be involved, federal, state, county, and local governments, so that it would be thoroughly inclusive. And then the rest of the bill is deleted, and the new Section 2 allows the directors of the two agencies, Fish and Wildlife and Agriculture, to appoint a working group, and they will only meet semi-annually. There will be no compensation for the members. The idea is that the agencies and the work group members would use their own time, because this is such a critical issue to them, to try to find some resolution to the issue. As you remember, the fiscal originally was very considerable on this, and the current fiscal impact has a zero amount designated. As a result of these meetings, then the work group would try to bring back a proposed resolution to the next legislative session, outlining some kind of a plan, and perhaps at that time there might even be funding available for some kind of plan. And the entire thing will sunset January 2004.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for a very comprehensive report and getting everybody together. It looks like you've done an excellent job on this.
Everyone was very cooperative. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I had a scathing email, and I just want for the record for you to make comments, because I think the amendment takes care of what their concern was. They said there'd be
concern is there is no provision for public input or oversight, and it cuts citizens entirely out of the equation. Can you just respond to that on, it doesn't say who actually now is going to serve on this, task force or whatever it's called. Can you just respond to that on who would make up this committee?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Mona Sanderson. I also want to thank you for sitting in on this working group. It was very valuable to have your help as well. I think that the directors and the folks in the working group talked about having, sheep growers, cattlemen, farmers, those people who would be impacted, as well as other special interests. Generally, there are environmental groups or others who would participate in these task forces. But perhaps because agriculture, I believe Chuck Craig is here and Roy Elliker are here, and since they would probably be recommending to the directors who would be appointed, perhaps they would like to acknowledge that on the record as well. Myself, I feel that there would certainly be a broad range of folks involved that would meet all of the public's, the citizens' interests. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'd like to call Roger Huffman and Chuck Craig. Okay. Roy, Elliker of ODS&W. You have a missing in action person.
Madam Chair, Representative of the committee, I'm Roger Huffman with the Department of Agriculture. I'm administrator of the Animal Health and Identification Division and been kind of active in this particular program within the Department of Ag. Chuck Craig was had another committee that he needed to go have some input on amendments. So I will I was a part of the working group that Representative Lee chaired, and there was representation from the Cattlemen's Association, the Farm Bureau, and the counties, those various, I guess you might say, spokespersons for those groups. There, as you see on line 10, it talks about the 9 and 10, we develop and coordinate programs and activities to assist farmers, ranchers, and other landowners. I don't believe that we have any intent to have a closed meetings or council meetings, that we would have representation from the segments, you might say, at large, and then we would certainly publish the meeting notices so that any particular individuals certainly could attend and have their input. That would be our perspective on this particular issue.
Can I ask you, I don't see any number given here of how big this council will be. What are you envisioning?
Chairman Close, I don't know that we put a number on it, but I would defer to Representative Lee if she, as chair of the group, had any particular idea. I guess if I had to take a shot in the dark, I would say somewhere between 10 and 12.
Fairly small.
Yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, Roy Elliker, legislative coordinator for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, here to echo Representative Lee's remarks and Roger Huffman's from Department of Agriculture. And it's certainly, and let me put this on the record from the department, certainly our intention to be successful that these have to be involving the public, these meetings. And certainly ourselves in agriculture will make every effort, you know, regardless of how many people end up serving as task force members, whether that's 10 or maybe more than that, 15. But certainly, you know, the larger it gets, the more unwieldy it gets. But certainly the heart of this is not so much the task force itself, but the effort to gather the information and talk to the public about these issues. And certainly we would be, that's our emphasis here, and want to assure the committee that this will be a very public effort, and people have a chance to come and talk about the issues.
Good. Do you envision yourself having some type of public hearing at some point?
I'm sure. I'm not sure it might be as formal as a hearing, but certainly it will be, I would assume, be kind of a public announcement through the various groups, perhaps in the local paper, if we have one over in Eastern Oregon, for instance, and making every effort to invite folks in and talk about these issues so we can start to get a feel for it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Department of Fish and Wildlife's information, yes, we do have local papers in Eastern Oregon. But if I might express a concern that I have, the Department of Agriculture and the Fish and Wildlife, our Department of Fish and Wildlife are here at the stand. I am always paranoid about multi-agency involvement in any of these things. The more agencies we add to that, the more the degree of confusion I think that goes up. And I often refer to it going up at a geometric rate. And that is no reflection on either the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I mean, just pick any two agencies at random and put them jointly involved in a project, it becomes much more complex than if it's one agency involved with the project. And quite frankly, I think either agency might be able to do this as what is talked about in the bill. And I think there's a glaring demand for, management, wildlife damage management out there. I'm most supportive of the concept and principle that's here. I just have concern about multiple agency. For example, there is no reference here to how the appointments are made or split up between the agencies, whether we got 12 people, we give six and six. And it goes on to say that they serve at the pleasure of the directors, which means the directors can fire them. So does that mean that you can fire ODF&W's and ODF&W can fire Department of Agriculture? I'm not meaning to be ridiculous with this, but it does concern me, and I see potential problems that will appear down the line when we get two agencies involved in a process of this type.
I guess as a follow-up, I'm wondering why in Section 2, why the work group, or the Section 2 in the original bill spelled that out, Representative Jensen, why that was removed.
Madam Chair, everyone felt that both of the agencies were well aware of the people who would participate, who need to participate, and there was concern that a list might not be inclusive enough, and that the folks in the work group, and I see the sheep growers and Farm Bureau and some of the others are here, felt very comfortable with allowing the agencies to make the selections because they know who the constituents are. This idea about serving at the pleasure of the directors was something that legislative council inserted that we had not requested. Maybe something of that sort needs to be there, but that was not what the committee had discussed. We assumed that this work group would be continuing on through the process.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
In response to that, I'm not sure that I'm suggesting we go back and further amend the proposal that we have here before us. The bill we have before us, I'm merely suggesting that this is something that always concerns me, and I guess in part in the process of making that suggestion, putting the two departments on notice that we sure don't want this type of thing to be happening.
We're going to give them the chance to prove themselves.
Madam Chair. A couple of questions, for either one, I'll just throw them out and you of them. Do the agencies need, you know, a bill to be able to create an advisory council? Also, and I would support passing a bill through as it is, you know, given where we're at in the, you know, stage of the legislature. But I think it would be helpful if the, you know, if some people of the, you know, the group would, you know, support putting, you know, into the bill at some point, you know, an assurance that it's going to be a public meeting, so there's daylight on it, and that while I agree that this group should be weighted in favor of the most affected, you know, groups, that it would be appropriate because of the concern that came in by email, and I think that there's out there that there be some representation of public or conservation groups as well.
So noted. Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. No. See further questions? So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2049 and open a work session on House Bill 2049.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I'd move House Bill, or I would move the, is a dash one amendment to House Bill 2049.
Representative Jensen moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 2049. Is there discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I'd move House Bill 2049 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 2049 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative King.
Seems like it'd be okay for consent calendar.